Welcome to Mock It. Liz is a user experience strategist turned project manager committed to human-centered driven approaches and results. She has worked on 20 plus higher education, government, and client-facing websites and software platforms, creating long-lasting, user-focused digital solutions. Liz is devoted to equity and strives to celebrate diversity and inclusion in the industry and beyond. Marie is a former visual designer turned agile-loving, human-centered design advocate. They have helped government organizations for almost a decade build successful digital products by aligning cross-functional teams around a deep understanding of the user at the heart of their mission. Marie is passionate about improving user experiences while achieving business objectives in harmony. They are also a strong advocate for women in STEM.
Hi, I'm Marie.
And I'm Liz.
And this is Mock It, a podcast sponsored by MetroStar, where we take a deep dive look into UX design, trending design topics, and chatting with our friends in the field. Let's get started.
So today, speaking of chatting with friends in our field, we have a great podcast for everyone. We'll be speaking to Emily and Rachel from Ladies at UX. Emily is a lead UX design researcher and CX strategist for Microsoft's Global Customer Success, Customer Experience Center of Excellence, and chapter co-lead for Ladies at UX, Washington, D.C. Emily has 14 years of experience working for government, corporate, and nonprofit clients specializing in UX, CX strategy, research and design, service design, and design thinking. She has an extensive experience leading workshops, writing test plans and scripts, creating prototypes, interviewing participants, analyzing qualitative and quantitative data, and designing solutions that solve experience issues. She's a former Peace Corps volunteer and is currently an ADPL List UX mentor.
Rachel is a designer, creative coder, and animator with 15 plus years of experience creating world-class products, applications, websites, and interactive experiences for Apple, Viacom, Houzz, and more. Rachel is currently a DC chapter lead of Ladies at UX, where she helps organize monthly events and provides design and career mentorship. Welcome, Rachel.
Thanks. Great to be here. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah. Of course. I'm super excited about today's episode with you two.
Yeah. So now that we've read your bios, we'll hand it off to you two to introduce yourselves and give a little background on your career journeys. So with that, Emily, do you want to start?
Sure. So I was in the Peace Corps. I always start with the Peace Corps because I feel like it's a weird thing to start with because most people are like, wait, what? But I was in the Peace Corps and I did a lot of, I was basically doing human-centered design. I was a consultant working with the local government. So I got a really hands-on, very quick, like pushed into leadership position to be running all these different programs, to be designing, facilitating. And after that, I basically wanted to go into international affairs. I got a master's degree. You know, I'm a DC native. I feel like it's all I knew. And that's like my family was pushing that. Tech was never in the picture. And then I went to basically the New School, which has Parsons, is like a very well-known university, you know, that does a lot with that media and with design. And so through that, I was starting to like freelance and take courses more specifically around design. And I started working with nonprofits. And then I really quickly was just doing UX. You know, I was doing UX in a digital realm rather than like on the ground. And I just loved it. And so over the course of my career, I've worked at nonprofits. I've worked as a freelancer and I've also done agency and consulting work. And now I work with Microsoft. So I've kind of done all of the different types of work experiences, you know, which has made me really grateful to be where I am right now, but also have a really good understanding of what it's like to be in other, you know, jobs.
Awesome.
Yeah. And Rachel, did you want to give a quick intro of yourself?
Sure. I'll try to be quick. It's not my strong point. I went to film school. Cool. And minored in Italian, you know, as one does. And in my last semester, I took an animation class and it blew my mind. It was awesome. Great teacher. We did cell animation. And after 4 years of like wrangling actors and, you know, getting insurance and hiring cameras and scheduling, it was amazing just to be able to make things on my own at 3 a.m. And so I started animating some short films, taught myself After Effects, taught myself broadcast design basically, and moved to New York and became a broadcast designer and worked predominantly for Viacom, like Nickelodeon, MTV, doing graphics for, you know, their on-air things. And it was really great and fun. I was freelancing and I wanted, you know, I wanted a full-time situation. Anyway, skipping ahead or whatever people do. So I got a job at Apple. I moved to San Francisco and commuted to Cupertino. And I was hired initially to do title design for iMovie because they had switched platforms from, anyway, I don't know. The engineer rewrote the whole thing in a closet overnight. He's a genius, but he forgot to kind of add in the titles. I mean, that was the whole thing. It was a consumer app and people could edit videos and just drop in pre-made baked titles that looked professional. So I was able to kind of start asking questions about, well, why is this button here? And why does it move like that? And, you know, we need better access to the fonts palette, better access to colors. And so I started designing the user interface and moved from what we at that time called a content designer into more of a user experience designer or a human factors design engineer. And then at a certain point at Apple, I was commuting, you know, 100 miles a day, and I was running out of my commute juice. And one evening it took me 4 hours to get home because of an accident. And I just thought, I don't want to commute anymore. But then I looked at moving to Cupertino and Anyway, I decided it was time to leave Apple and pursue maybe working at smaller companies where I could have a bigger impact on products and move a little faster. Apple was amazing, great intro, but just maybe time to branch out into kind of more standard product design. So I worked at startups in the Bay Area. I worked at House, then Hotel Tonight, which was acquired by Airbnb. And then I became head of product design for a dating app called Coffee Meets Bagel, which was definitely the most awesome job because I finally had a stake my voice was really heard there about, I was able to advocate for the design process and add more time into the design cycle. But I'd already made up my mind to go back to school and I felt, and we're going to touch on this later, but I had imposter syndrome and I felt unqualified for that role. So, and then I went back to school to learn some other stuff. And now I'm in Washington and I'm a freelance product designer, but I also, as a freelancer, you wear a lot of hats, which I actually really like. So that's, you know, a short story.
Yeah. I also was doing video editing when I was like kind of getting into things. And I think that's like the beginning of your career. You're kind of just like grasping at all mm-hmm. the different things that you're interested in. And I think the one thing that I liked the most was like making sure that I could talk with people and not, I'm more of like the, probably like a researcher or strategist than just pure designer. Cause I think I like to interact a lot with people, but it was cool to be able to, as a freelancer, you can kind of pick and choose what you want more than what you're given at an agency or like a nonprofit. So yeah.
Sure. Absolutely. You can choose. Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I think
you can for sure.
A little bit, but you're also like, how am I going to line up my next role? And you're constantly hustling and, you know, you take on too much work because you can't say no because you don't know when the next job is coming. So it's a balance. But when you're talking about video editing, I feel like that's really interesting and I didn't know that. And I feel like that's the storyteller in you, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like that experience of editing and crafting, you know, a story, for lack of a better word, feeds into kind of how you approach work or being able to talk to stakeholders, etc. What do you think, Emily?
Oh yeah, I love that aspect of editing because I was able to do that, and now I don't do it in the same way, but I try to do that even in presentations, like building out more. More specific storytelling and the way that we're showcasing like what's happening to a user, I've been practicing with my colleagues on different ways we can present, you know, findings presentations mm-hmm. that more mm-hmm. like really from the, like telling the story, like this is, you know, Tony. but people don't do that anymore because I feel like we're so quick to get out deliverables that we're just like, these are the insights, the themes, and then it's like boom, 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 recommendations. And then you don't really talk about the human, and that's the whole point of what we're doing, is like trying to relate it back to that person we're trying to make an impact on. So sorry, I know we just went on.
No, it's great. Actually, Liz and I had been doing that on our project as well. I brought that in too, like and I feel like the conversation with your stakeholders or whoever's reviewing it, giving them that story, that background, right? You get past like, I don't like this blue, or like that font's too big. And right, you get back to the human's issues with the product and like, what are we really addressing? Yeah. So no, it's a great point that you guys just went on.
It's challenging though, because I've been in situations where like, you have two slides and I'm like, why two slides? Why two? Like, can we have four and space out all the content and like have a better story? Like, but I feel like there's a lot of pressure to just put all the information on one thing. And then you lose that element of storytelling, which is what, you know, again, back to what we're saying, like why it's so important and why we're here. So
yeah.
End of
no, we love them. No, that was a great tip and conversation. I did want to say, I think it's so cool the two of you have such different backgrounds and career journeys, just to show our listeners, right? Like, you don't have to go to school straight for UX design or research, right? Like you said, you can grasp at all the things that you're interested in the beginning of your career, and then, you know, see where it leads you, where your next chapter is. So it's really awesome to hear.
Yeah. Or you can have a midlife crisis and go back to school right in the middle of the height of your career. That I wouldn't, anyway.
I would say that I have more of like a UX education, because I did General Assembly. I was like the second or third class in DC. And I had amazing, amazing like teachers, professors, Phil and Toral, shout out. But that was like, it was like a light bulb moment where I'm like, oh my God, this is what we call what I've been doing. Cause you know, in DC, I think, I don't know, growing up in the DC culture where they're like, you have to pick mm-hmm. one thing, you know, like you can't be doing, my mom would always tell me, I'm sorry, mom, but like, you gotta focus on one thing. Like, you're doing too many things. Cause I was like, I want to do this and that and this. And then when I got to UX in General Assembly, they're like, oh, it's like brings in like project management, like marketing, product design, regular design. It was like, you know, all these things. I'm like, yes, this is like what I've been doing. So it was nice to finally get that confirmation. But I do, because I have that structure, I think I'm a little bit different, but now it's like really normal for people to go to boot camps. Like, it wasn't normal when I was going, because it was like a completely new thing at the time. That was like 15 years ago.
So this actually kind of segues up into one of our next topics. So both of you have had very interesting career journeys. And also, as we know, COVID has really dramatically changed the workforce mm-hmm. and how people apply to jobs. So according to a December 2022 Gartner survey, 56% of candidates report applying for jobs outside of their current comfort zones and areas of expertise. Do you have advice for people who are in that same boat applying for jobs that maybe they want to change their trajectory, but they're not exactly what their background might be or their exact comfort zone?
Yeah, I think so Hewlett Packard, they have this like famous survey that they did where like men apply for a job when they meet only 60% of qualifications and women need to meet 100% of them. I mean, we hear mm-hmm. that a lot. And I think that for women in particular, if I'm going to speak to that, you know, audience or people that identify as women, I think we don't always apply to jobs because we're like scared we're not going to meet all the qualifications. But I think we have to like kind of think about why we do that. I think there's a lot of bias in work environments where we actually do need to be more qualified to be hired. Like, I think McKinsey had a report that came out that found that men actually are often promoted based more on their potential versus women for their experience and their track record. And so we have that kind of mm-hmm. ceiling that we're kind of hitting up against. And then historically, we've also been, we've had to have more certifications just to be considered, you know, being like, to be part of the gang, right? So Lastly, the other thing is, like, girls, I think we've been socialized since really young age to always follow the rules, and we're rewarded constantly for following the rules. So I think when women in particular look at a job description, like, oh, I don't qualify for this, they also think that, like, they shouldn't apply, mm-hmm. because it's like the rules of hiring, when actually it's not. You know, obviously people are doing it. So, like, my advice for people, particularly for women, is if you feel like you can visualize yourself in that role, apply mm-hmm. to it, you know, but also know that be realistic about, like, the other things that are the challenges that we face. So, like, if you feel more confident getting another certification where you feel like you can go in and, like really do well in that, you know, that position, do it. But I think there's a lot of, like, to be said about faking it till you make it. It's hard to do, but I think, you know, if you tell yourself, like, you can do this, I think you can actually get, you know, into a place where you can get into the job and just learn as fast mm-hmm. as you can. The other thing I wanted to say about is, like, career switching in particular, like, I think, so I didn't say this, like, totally, I did a really quick, like, overview of, like, my job, but basically I went from freelancing, doing a lot of different things. And then I was, started working in a nonprofit where I was a marketing and creative director. And I felt like I had to, like, kind of, I was doing a lot of marketing, also freelancing. So I was doing a lot of different things, but I needed to figure out what the buzzwords were in, like, the new industry that was going into, like, UX. And, like, even now I'm actually working more in customer experience, and they have a very similar term. They say, like, outside in, which is basically the same thing as being human centered. It's like focusing, mm-hmm. being customer centric. So my recommendation is for people that are career switching. A lot of times you already have the skills. You just don't really know what they're called. Yeah. So just, like, figuring out what those buzzwords are, applying them to your resume, applying them to your interview, I think that can be really helpful. And then just push yourself to, like, know that you can do it. If you feel like you're going to career switch and you want to make that move, you already have the inner drive to, like, be learning and to get there. So that's kind of my recommendation.
Yeah. Rachel, I'd love to hear your response too, but really quick on, like, those buzzwords. It's like when you see, right, because when you're coming out of school, right, everyone wants so many years of experience, but you're like, how the heck do I have that? How to rewrite, like, your experience with being in the service industry, whether that's, like, in retail, in restaurants, but how you can reword that. And really, like, I was a server during college. I used a lot of those skills, you know, time management, managing multiple tasks going on for what I do in my day job now. So I think that's a really great point about you have the skills. It's just rewording them, thinking about them in that new context of where you want to go.
Yeah. Being a server is definitely, I think when I see people that were servers, like, restaurant industry, I'm like, okay, cool. Because I think you have to deal with, like, terrible clients, which is really, you know, if you're doing client relations, that's a really important skill to have that is mm-hmm. hard, you know, time management. Also, you can really understand the service design element of, like, the back end mm-hmm. of the house and the front end of the house, you know, because you're literally working in it. Sorry. But yeah. Rachel.
That's a good analogy. Okay. So in terms of, like, so job seeking. So I'm a little demoralized about that right now. So, I mean, it's very difficult to find a job, let alone try to find a job outside of your experience. And I think you have to be very strategic about it. And again, about what you were saying about the transferable skills and the buzzwords, look super important. There is a plug for an Irishman, because I was originally Irish a long time ago, and I moved here to DC when I was 10 from Dublin. And now I sound like this, totally. But so it's because people made fun of my accent. They were like, say it again. And I'd be like, potato. So anyway, this guy, his name is Paddy Jobsman, and he has a lot of great recommendations for people trying to switch from one career to another, and finding the right buzzwords, but also, you know, stuff that we already know. Reach out to people in the mm-hmm. field, talk to them, get an idea of what their job is, their day-to-day responsibilities, the good stuff, the bad stuff. Do, like, informational interviews, coffee chats, whatever. Reach out to people on LinkedIn. So there's no quick fix. There's no fast button or whatever. Like, it takes a long unless you're incredibly lucky, it takes a long, it's going to take a minute to, you know, to transfer from one to the other. And everybody's working remotely. Everyone's applying for 100% remote jobs. So best tip would be to apply for a hybrid role in your city so that you're already eliminating 50% of the competition. I just made up that number. I like to do that. So, you know, a lot of the competition. Or, you know, just be willing to go back into the office full time. There's a lot. I personally would like a hybrid role, but I've also read articles that it's actually harder for your brain. Mm-hmm. And because every day is different, where you're not in the routine of like commuting and et cetera. Although I don't want to leave my cat alone all day, but I know.
I feel you that.
But I think like I personally find communication over Slack and email and text, I find it like overwhelming. And also it takes like definitely for me 3 times longer to understand what someone is trying to communicate mm-hmm. to me. Maybe it's because I'm a bit dyslexic, but I don't know. Whereas in person, you just get it, right? And so I'm on, no, that's a tangent. So I'm going to totally, at what Emily was saying about getting certified, absolutely. There's so many great options now with Udemy mm-hmm. and then Coursera, and there's like Google, you know, project management certificates, and there's those are legitimate. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think like what Emily was saying many, many years ago, maybe they weren't that legitimate, but now they certainly are.
Can I say something about the certificates? Like, I don't think it's just like, okay, now I have a certificate, like I have an MBA and now it's on my resume. I think the reason to get a certificate is what I was talking about before. If you're career switching and you don't know the lingo, now if you've listened to this, like you listen to this program, now you like understand how to talk like, mm-hmm. like in that realm. So if you don't know enough about, you know, interaction design, now you know how to, now you know the words. To maybe you knew how to do it, but you didn't know the words. So like, and so much of our interviews are about mm-hmm. words and how we communicate what we can do. And I think that's really frustrating for a lot of people because often they are incredible designers, but they can't necessarily communicate it. And the ones that tend to communicate well are the ones that get the job. And then there's people that like can't do anything and they're just very good communicators. And you're like, why are you there? But like, you know, and it's because they can communicate. So I think use that certificate as that way to like put a different lens on it. You're not just doing it to like get it and put it in your repertoire. You're doing it to also like be able to advance you in being able to speak better about what you're doing.
Well, totally. But also by doing the certificate, you can really explore whether you're actually interested in doing whatever it is that you think you're interested in, because the idea of something and the reality of something are very different. Mm-hmm.
Very different.
I would also recommend, joining local groups. Mm-hmm. I mean, definitely ladies at UX, we have chapters all around the world. And, but also there's other things, in DC, there's a DC tech, meetup that is amazing. There's a meetup called Code and Coffee. That's not just for, engineers. It's also for designers or project managers. So there's so much now. I mean, and I think that's maybe a benefit of COVID that these organizations kind of got more organized online. Mm-hmm. And those are my tips. And then like I don't know the rest of it, like how to not lose hope and how to not I can't give advice on that except that like joining these groups and sharing your experience with other people who are looking and having like just knowing that other people are having a hard time, that it's not just you. I think that can help. It's very difficult at the moment. It's not only have there been like all these layoffs and they're still happening. But you know, I feel like every time I send my resume, it's like to the black hole, right? Pew, there it goes. I was going to make an animation of just like flipping resumes into a black hole, because that's what it feels like. So, you know, and I would, you know, stuff that we already know, don't apply blindly to jobs, make a connection at the company. Then you have to tweak your resume to fit the job. So, I mean, that becomes exhausting mm-hmm. because how many resumes are you going to customize? And So again, it comes down to being strategic. There's also an organization I'm just checking out now called Never Search Alone, which is and the idea is that you create or join a job search council and you're talking with people outside your industry who can offer insight on how like they view you and how you can figure out your market fit. I'm still discovering it. It's probably good. I've only just begun. So that is my advice about job seeking. There's no make it awesome button, you know, find a job button. It's a process.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate how honest you just shared about your job seeking experiences right now. Cause I feel like right with social media and everything, you see like, oh, like I got a job. I got my boot camp certificate and I've done it. And I think that leads to being very unrealistic, right? That happens for some people, but they also might not be sharing all of the extra stuff that they've done. We put out like our best selves and our quickest selves, right, to beat those algorithms for the short 7 seconds. But so I really appreciate like you telling like your honest journey. I think the joining those meetups is also really great for you to connect with others. And then also when I was starting out, it was really great. I started out as the only designer for where I was at. If you are an only designer, to start to build your design community, it's very helpful to join any of the meetups in your city or area. They tell you that like in the boot camps or school, like, oh yeah, you'll have a team and a whole design community. And a lot of times they're smaller groups. Like our project had the three of us.
Yeah.
I was fortunate. This is my third job and I finally had more than just one designer. I had other great coworkers, but you know, it's nice, like, Emily, you talked about, like, speaking the same language. There's certain things you get to nerd out if someone is, you know, in that topic versus, you know, my PMs are awesome, but I don't necessarily get to nerd out on the design or the UX.
Yeah, 100%. And that's why, honestly, that's part of the greatness about Ladies at UX and our chapter meetups, because that's literally what people are doing. They're just, like, nerding out about UX, and it's really cool. And especially being on a team where I've been on a team where sometimes I'm the only UXer or I'm like the only, I've been many for a long time, like was like the only like leadership position, as UXer. So I couldn't really talk about my experience with anyone else. There was no one else I could relate to. And like, just like specifically to UX, you know, like maybe there was like a creative director and they were doing different things than I was doing. And they had different struggles. I think people in UX, a lot of, with companies that have like low UX maturity levels, you're constantly advocating for UX and why it's important. And it's really exhausting. And actually at the last in-person meetup, we had a whole conversation about it because it's happening everywhere. Because UX is kind of, in a weird way, it's not a new industry, but it is a new industry. I think we're tearing it out of different silos and kind of pushing stuff together. That's good and bad, but it's causing us to like, really have to constantly be advocating for that. And so having those conversations can be really helpful.
Totally.
Just for affirmation. No,
right. But that's so helpful with human relationships.
So I'm going to wrap this portion of the conversation up with just, we did a Ladies at UX plug. I'll do a Metro Star plug real fast. To your point that we were discussing with, looking for, people don't always apply for jobs that they don't hit every check mark, especially women. Metro Star, we purposely put stuff on our applications or job recs so that people know, you know, we're a friendly company. We are both looking for what you currently have and also your potential to fit in and cultural fit. So with that, I will now switch us off to Ladies at UX that we've been angling at a little bit and talking through with this conversation. So as mentioned, you both are co-chairs for the DC chapter of Ladies at UX. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about Ladies at UX?
Ladies at UX is a group for women, those who identify as women, and all of our allies to come together in a community to support each other, to share knowledge, to provide mentorship, to provide career support, to nerd out, as you were saying, on the design things, on the UX things, topics is a better word, and to feel supported. I mean, whether you're working remotely alone at home, or you're the only designer in a company, or you're looking to transition into UX, we offer, like, we're open to everyone, and it's very casual, which is what I was drawn to. It's not like a buttoned up professional organization made for a certain tier of designer. It's open to everyone. Very egalitarian. And Ladies at UX, so we have a DC chapter, but it's a international group with local chapters throughout the world, mostly predominantly in the United States. But we have really super active chapters. Our London chapter is 10 years old last week. We have chapters in Brighton, in Dublin, in Barcelona, Munich, Frankfurt. I think in Brazil, Brazil, and then throughout the United States. And Emily resurrected the DC chapter last summer.
Yeah, I did a shout out to my General Assembly professor Torl, and she was actually working for Huge. She was like a UX director there during that time. And while I was taking the course, she started Ladies at UX. So this was a long time ago, and it was running for a while, and then it just went on. You know, it went on a hiatus for six years, and I would always be like, okay, I'm gonna bring it back. And then COVID happened, and I had two kids. I have like a 1 and a 3-year-old. So I was like, I don't know. But I think when I moved to fully, I left my DC agency job and I started working remote in around like this time, actually last year. And I was working as a consultant with people all over the world. And then I moved into Microsoft. I didn't know anybody. And so for me, I had been stuck in my house for like what seemed like a century because of COVID and small children. So I was like, I need to have physical, like, you know, interaction with people and be able to talk about the things that I'm dealing with UX, because I'm working so much alone. So that's like kind of why I restarted the chapter, but it's grown into so much more. And I met Rachel and I was like, she's going to be great. I it was like the day one I met her. I'm like, hey, do you want to help become like a co-lead? And she's like, what? But I just kind of saw her being really great, and she is. So it's been really lovely. And you know, we hear things from people after they have these like in-person meeting events, but people now hang out like outside of the chapter. Yes. And that's really cool. Like people are like going on vacations together. And then the other thing is, like, we had this like really beautiful brunch that Rachel did recently, which was like a fundraising kind of strategy session with like an intimate number of people. And we had all these really amazing conversations, and we've had people that were able to find jobs like right after from that. And it, like, I think that's the beauty of this, is really just providing space for each other, holding space for each other. And also, I learned that it might be also an activist organization.
just a quick aside, in an article, Ladies at UX was referred to as an activist organization, and but we don't know if, I mean, unless activism is just like
for ourselves, yeah,
creating a community when there is none. I mean, it's not like we're out there burning bras and stuff. But,
So what has been the most rewarding part of being a part of Ladies at UX?
I'm going to say the community for me has been excellent, because I've been able to talk about my job search, and also, which is also kind of informing maybe some of our future workshops or activities, I've been able to connect with other designers to do portfolio reviews or actual interview rehearsal. You know, it's crazy being a designer. So we have to do so much for our job search, besides like having a portfolio that's made a certain way, and we use the buzzwords, and we, you know, there's just, it's a lot. And so the only way to, I think, to succeed is to practice. And then, you know, ironically, you know, it's, I used to do stand up, or I did stand up a long time ago, like six times. But anyway, you know, you have to rehearse and pretend that like all your carefully chosen words are totally off the cuff, right? Even though it's not at all like that. And you're reading from the back of your hand, you know? Yeah, definitely community is number one. And then working with Emily has been fantastic. And being put in the position of leadership again, you know, has been, you know, just, I don't know, being super cheesy has felt or given my life more meaning or something in a time when I needed it the most.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. So lovely. Like inspired now.
Yeah. Emily, you're up.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Gosh. I think just being able to provide. Oh, so the other reason why I started this, you know, restarted this chapter is that like I realized my whole life I haven't had a lot of mentorship. And I've had some bosses that have supported me. I think you were talking about like, you know, we had been discussing like sponsorship. Like I haven't really had a sponsor or like a mentor, like maybe a little bit, like I've had some bosses that have advocated for me to, mm-hmm. to get, you know, hired, but I didn't really have anyone that really was like purely a UXer, like that understood what I was doing, that was like a UX VP or mm-hmm. like, you know, or a director of UX. Like it was always somebody had like a little bit of understanding about what I did. And so I found that it's so important to have that bond to be able to provide that to other people. I wanted to create that community for people that might not have it. And so I think that's what I really cherish about Ladies.UX is that we're all providing mentorship in different ways. Like I'm getting mentorship from the younger professionals, you know, coming into, cause they're like telling me about things that are happening that I have no idea. And I'm already sounding like an oldie, but also like I've met other people that are also in like leadership positions and they've given me really good advice. And so I haven't had that. And so I think that's been really like a beautiful thing. And, you know, and even Rachel, like she's not even Rachel, but Rachel, like she's come from such a different background and she's taught me so much about like a different mm-hmm. lens than mm-hmm. I wouldn't have normally gotten. So.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm really excited to join an event that you all hold. I know you had one last week. It was a virtual one. I unfortunately, mm-hmm. right with a kid, I missed it, but do you want to talk quickly about your in-person events and virtual events? And then we can also do how people can get involved.
Sure. Yeah. So last week we had a really amazing event about women UX and the art of holding space. And we did actually a sound bath. I work with a sound healer. And so she did a really lovely sound bath, which I think a lot of people needed last week. I don't know. Energetically last week was insane, but we are doing basically May 1st, we have an event coming up. It's a call for volunteers. So anyone who's interested in becoming a volunteer, I believe it's at 7:30 PM Eastern time. It'll be virtual, but it's, we realize after we've been like maybe 8 months in, we're growing and we have now, we just hit 200 members from starting basically last summer. So that's pretty quick. You know, in terms of things. So we need more people to maybe help support us. And also we want to get more people in the community involved. So it's not just me and Rachel. And we also have somebody who works with us, Malika, who's amazing. She's our social lead. So I wanted to give her a shout out too, but I think we just need to be growing. So we have that coming up in May. And then I'm actually doing for the UX research conference within Microsoft, I'm doing two like workshops. I'm doing a UX versus CX and then also AI ethics application through Foresight Frameworks, like workshop presentation. So I'm probably going to see if I can get like do those as well in like through the course of the summer with my other colleagues, because we're already going to have a presentation done. And then we also have one in August coming up with the head of UX and design at Vanguard, Sean Bourbon. She'll be talking about mentorship, and she actually is my mentor because I found her on ADP list, which is a mentorship program that I highly recommend anyone who's looking for mentorship reviews, career searching to apply to. It's really easy to look into to basically find a mentor, but yeah, those are, that's what we have kind of in the docket right now. But
sorry, how are we defining sponsor versus mentor?
I had this exact question earlier too.
So I am going to spit out the answer that we had in our discussion, if this, this works.
Yeah.
So,
yes.
Like a mentor is someone that you can go talk to, you can, you know, bounce ideas off of, they can, you know, give you some feedback, stuff like that. But a sponsor is someone who actually has the authority to sponsor or like sponsor you along up the food chain.
But, yeah. Like, so to,
yeah,
I'm sure I haven't had to do it, but Liz and I went through it when we got our promotions, my gosh, like 3 years ago now. I guess you would consider our PM was kind of our sponsor, but she had to like really advocate for us, go through the whole HR process, really push it through.
I think it takes forever anywhere, which is why when you take a role, you have to choose wisely and advocate for the highest position you can be offered when you are offered a role anywhere, because promotions are, internal promotions are notoriously you know, take a long time.
And even if you have a sponsor, like I had a boss who was a sponsor, like he was really like, he like did a PowerPoint presentation to showcase like the importance of UX, but there still was like, there, he was alone in his island. So like, he didn't have a sponsor. Like, I feel like he had his own sponsor for his career, but not necessarily like understood the bridge for mine to bring up. So it's like, it's not, sometimes it's complicated. It's not just one sponsor that will get you to the top. Like, you need to create multiple avenues. So like, that's why I was saying making a relationship with leadership is really important, particularly in UX, because UX is not just, in my opinion, just like I don't know, a thing that we do. It's like embedded into the process. It's like a process. It's organizational change. And so I've gone into every company that I've worked in and like literally been doing organizational change, not realizing I knew I was doing it, but I'm like, I'm not qualified. And I think with customer experience, I just finished like a Forrester certification. And they were saying like, to really make all these changes, like you have to have, you have to have a leadership like to be basically backing you. Like, it has to come top down. And I learned that the hard way. Like, I learned like trying to make this change happen at like a grassroots level. I mean, I'm a Peace Corps volunteer. That's like what we were taught, you know? And I'm like, oh shit, I'm sorry. Like, we need like, you need to have it at multiple levels. And it needs to, specifically in a company, you need to have that support from the top down, because that's how it works. Like, it's the company and the top is like the one control. It's not your family, you know, even though they might tell you it's your family. We're not family.
Lies.
No, I think it's a great point though, right? You need to have relationships all throughout an organization, especially if you're bringing in UX and trying to mature it. Right. Definitely from the top down, right? Your CEO, I guess, would be the most, if you can. So we have a smaller company, MetroStar is smaller. Ali is super personable. So, right, you can have the conversations all the way up from, right, your senior leaders, your principals, your directors, your VPs, all the way up. But, right, it can be really scary and intimidating. But like Emily said, it's very important to, you know, reach out and get to know them. They're humans, too, just like you.
Yeah.
But it's really hard to do, I have to say. Like, working at Microsoft, it's a massive company. It's 200,000 people plus or whatever. And, you know, you have your immediate team, but I'm not walking in an office where I just like walk past somebody. So like, it's extra hard, I think, in a remote environment to seek out these people, because half the time I don't know who they are. Like, I'm still trying to learn like the organization, how it works at like a org chart level, because there's just so many different departments and stuff. So it can be challenging in this new environment. And I don't really know if I have like great advice for it, but other than just talking to your manager and like seeing who they talk to and seeing if you can set up meetings and just get to know people. I mean, I think that's the start, right? And then like, you know, furthering the conversation, and the more people that know about you, like getting visibility can be really helpful, but it's hard in the remote world.
I want to tag on to that. So I agree with everything you said with, you know, working with your mentor to find out who they talk to and kind of go through that spider web. Something that we've done that I think has been very helpful, at least for myself, with getting to know people at MetroStar, is getting involved with things like International Women's Day. I mean, those sort of extras really, like, that's how you meet people, because it's people outside, usually it's people outside of your project or people in your project, but you know, you're meeting people out in addition to people who might be on your project that are doing stuff like that. There are also people who are in leadership that are putting time and effort into it. There are people who are on a different project that you might be like, oh, that's really cool. Like, can I learn more about you, learn about more about your project, like what opportunities, stuff like that. I think that's been really helpful. And that's been like a low, key and low pressure way to get to know people, because you're working on something together, but it's not like, you don't have that like boss, like.
Well, right. But, and you're also interested in that same topic.
Yes.
Right? You have already a point of something in common that you both are passionate about. Yeah. So, right. It's not like, hey, cold call ping, you want to go grab coffee or a virtual coffee and like know nothing. Yeah. So right, you can jump off from there.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then just to, so we have a mixture of in-person and virtual events, and our in-person events, we've had more in-person than not at the moment. And they range from, you know, very casual, just kind of meetups at bars to network and, you know, talk about whatever's going on in your life, to, you know, the brunch that Emily mentioned, which was more, was a fundraising, initiative, but also, and also a networking where people could meet each other in a more intimate environment. And, we hope to grow. We hope we can, get, kind of find more sponsors so that we can have events at, you know, maybe kind of more of a corporate location. I don't want to name any big companies. One might start with an M. And I think it would be a great way to grow, but then also to, for companies to source talent. You know, we're bringing all these talented women into a space, you know, like hire them.
That's awesome. So how would someone find out about these events or find Ladies at UX online?
Sure. So you can go to, so Ladies at UX, the bigger organization, has a website. And we have a chapter page. So it's going to be ladies.ux.com/Washington-DC. So you can find information there. We have, you can go to our LinkedIn group, just look for ladies.ux.DC. And there is a post pinned at the top of the page that has links to our mailing list, to our volunteer signup form, to our speaker signup form. And then we also have a Slack channel and that you can join. Just email us and we'll add you. Is there, Emily, did I miss something there?
I think that's
it's a good start at least, and, right? You can find,
The right now the LinkedIn group is the you know, it's where we're, it's how we're counting our membership, and where we're posting announcements and sharing jobs. And then we, our mailing list is really how we send out kind of information about our events. I think that's it. Like, we don't have a Twitter, we don't have an Instagram, you know, we may never have, we're thinking about those channels. I don't want to dilute, you know, our message, and I would like to keep it more centralized to LinkedIn. But we'll see as we grow. Some chapters are massive. The Seattle chapter has 4,000 members. So you know, when we get to 4,000, we'll think about branching out.
So you've mentioned that several reasons why you started Ladies at UX in the DC chapter. Could you also talk a little bit about one of the reasons, perhaps, of being the only woman in the room as your motivation?
Yeah, I think, you know, what it's like to be the only woman in the room as a UX professional has been difficult. And I've never really had a female role model. You know, it's always been white men, to be honest, to be completely frank. Like the higher it up it goes, the more that it is like male dominated. And I think that was really hard for me. And I wanted to be able to connect with other women that had the similar experience, because I think being the only woman in the room, being in a leadership position, a lot of times that what we have to do is like, or what my personal experience is that I've always had to have like lots of facts to back up all the proposals I've had. So I've had to prepare often a lot more than men, in my opinion, and defend my ideas more, because people didn't take my ideas at like face value at first, which is hard. I mean, I was a creative director when I was 28. You know, so I was in a room with like people that were very much older than me. And there was definitely like an old boys club culture. And then I've been in other agencies where it's been like a frat bro, like a frat bro culture, where I didn't really felt like I could relate. And I've been like excluded from the conversations. So it's been hard. And I think the other thing that I've noticed being like the only woman in the room, men often like talk more than women, and it can be hard to like quote unquote lean in. And I think I've even tracked it like at companies. There's this thing called Look Who's Talking. I recommend like Googling it. You can actually, it's like a manual tracker that you can track how much people are talking. Like you would do it. So you'd be like, okay, there's a man
talking
and you like track it. And I used to do it in conversations and it'd be like 95% men talking. And then if I was in the room and there was other women in the room that weren't necessarily like, maybe they were at the same level as me or lower, like I would often be the only one talking. And I think that can also be really hard. And like, that's why I want to work with more women and tell them like, you know, not tell them, but like, talk about these experiences and also encourage them to speak up more, because when you're the only woman in the room, I think there's a lot of pressure that everything has to be perfect. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why a lot of women don't speak up, is this like level of perfectionism that we feel like that we need to be perfect all the time. And also if you can barely get a word in, and then once you do it, there's just so much pressure on you to like be like very, very smart about what you're saying. And so I think having a space where I can talk about that with other women, I never had that. So like Ladies at UX has been really great to talk about that, because I've been in the industry for a while, like 14 years, and I've never been able to actually be like, hey, this is happening to me. And then recently I have, and I realized that it's very common, like it's a very common thing. And so like almost therapy ways, it's like helpful to get through that, but also know that like we can work together to kind of, you know, figure out how we can navigate this space, because it is still our reality. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any tips to share with our listeners of what you've learned of how to navigate that so far, or just even questions that maybe have been popping in your mind about like, why is this thing happening?
Yeah, I think, I mean, definitely work culture. There's definitely work cultures that are very like pro like women or like more into diversity and inclusion. I know Microsoft itself, like, this is one of the reasons I wanted to go into Microsoft, is because they're very, very good at like diversity, equity, mm-hmm. inclusion. There's still work to be done, obviously, in every company, but it's the first time that I've seen women in roles that are like, you know, like UX roles, but they're like mm-hmm. higher up. So that's been really cool. But I think tips I would give people is like, I think we still have to come a little bit more prepared, because it's again, going back to that reality that mm-hmm. we live in. But I think also trying to find people to be in your corner. So trying to find people in the leadership, you know, we talked about sponsorship a little bit, but like trying to find someone who can be more of that sponsor, that will help you and be your like supporting voice when you're not in the room. And I think in particular, I think getting men as well as women is important. So not just like female leaders, but mm-hmm. also men, because they're the ones that basically, you know, they lead the patriarchy, and that's what controls our entire like society. So we have to like, we have to tap into what we live in right now and work with what we have. So.
Yeah. Rachel, yeah, to Emily's point, I've also been the only woman in the room, and I chalked it up to being interested in, just happened to be interested in male-dominated fields, but, you know, I don't know. It's tough. My takeaway is, I have learned to ask for help, or to, I really bore the brunt of things without asking for help, because I viewed asking for help as a weakness, or as a, that I wasn't good enough at my job and I didn't want anyone to know, you know, kind of leaning into that imposter syndrome. I felt like admitting that I wasn't able to do something, was admitting failure. So, I wish I had asked for help it several times, because honestly, sometimes what I was being asked to do was kind of like unconscionable. I mean, not in a like unethical way, just workload mm-hmm. or, so definitely I'm going to try to be more aware of that as I move forward, but it's ironic because now I'm the person that people probably will come to ask for help and I'll be like, I don't know. But, I did once have a great advocate in a male, manager, and kind of, he was, how Emily was saying, like a sponsor, and he happened to be, definitely on my side. But he kind of chose me as opposed to the other way around. And in the future, I think I will look for that in my leadership, or in my peers. Definitely ask for help, and be more, you know, strategic and figure out who your allies are. But you have to be prepared. And I did a thing. I wasn't really nervous at all about being the only woman in the room until I got to Apple. And then I got really nervous. And I used to crack jokes, you know, to kind of like fill the void. But then I was kind of taken aside by my sponsor and told that like devalued my presence a little bit. And he was right. You know, like I didn't want to just be like the funny guy. Mm-hmm. You know, I really needed to be more, you know, a lead, a thought leader, and a solutions architect. I don't know, I just made that up.
That's great advice from both of you. Thank you very much for your insights on that. It's hard being the only one in the room, mm-hmm. you know, not just being the only female, you know, minorities, stuff like that. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Of course.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you for your insights on that. And then, again, as we kind of wrap up, Marie and I really want to thank you for being part of this podcast. This is our last episode for season 3. So we really appreciate being able to kind of go out with a bang with you two and ladies at UX. We'll be back for season 4.
Mm-hmm.
As mentioned, we will list everything in the show notes that anyone would need to reach out to the two of you and get involved in the chapter. Any final thoughts?
No, I want to say thank you to both Emily and Rachel for you two joining us this morning to record. That was a great podcast episode.
Yeah, this is super fun.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure to meet you and to do this podcast.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. So with that, this is Mock It. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share with your friends, and join us next time. If you're interested in learning more about how government and tech collide, visit metrostar.com and follow us along in our socials.
Oh, I should read the tag. Just destroy. Start again.